Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, it's time for Late Night here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Henry Lake and David Josephson taking you all the way up until 1 o'clock in the morning. We're kind of like the late night. We're the after party. We're the party and the after party. All rolled in one, Dave. That's how we roll. With a party right now, then after midnight with after party.
I like it.
Have you drinking your coffee yet today, though?
I got it right here next to me.
You do? Okay.
Yep. I'm ready to go.
All right.
Made
all
a Dunkin' run today.
All right. I see you. It's going to be a fun show. Everybody knows it's my time of year. It's March Madness. The brackets unveiled yesterday. Each hour, we're going to break down a region. Okay? And of course, because we are Gopher fans, okay, we'll be breaking down the East bracket before any of the other brackets, because we're going to start with the matchup in regards to the Minnesota Golden Gophers taking on Louisville in Des Moines. Maxie was just in doing his show. We're going to check in with him live from Des Moines on Wednesday night because the Gophers play Thursday morning. Also, coming up in 25 minutes at 9:30, we'll talk to friend of mine, Chris Broussard. Everybody knows the name. Fox Sports 1, also Fox Sports. Longtime ESPN insider when it comes to the NBA years ago, has transitioned to Fox here the last couple of years, and he also hosts a radio show on Fox Sports. So we'll talk to him about some NBA items, but also get his thoughts on college basketball, get his thoughts on Duke, and get his thoughts on Zion Williamson and what he thinks is going to happen here in the NCAA tournament. So that's my guy. I'm a big fan of Chris Broussard for many years. So we'll talk to him at 9:30. But let's start with Golden Gopher basketball, okay? It was revealed yesterday during the course of the brackets. It was revealed early on, too, that the Gophers were going to be the first game of the entire tournament, all right? They get it kicked off at 11:15. They'll be facing Louisville. So the Gophers ended up with a 10 seed, Louisville with the 7 seed in Des Moines for the East region, where the number one seed is the Duke Blue Devils. So now let me just take you guys back for a second. I said this, and I said it multiple times last week, that leading up to the Big Ten tournament, that the Gophers needed to not only beat Penn State. Well, they needed to beat Penn State to solidify a bid, okay? If they did not beat Penn State, I didn't think that they were going to get into the brackets, okay? I didn't think that they would be dancing without a Penn State victory. And think about how significant that victory was, okay? It was significant from this perspective. I continued to say all week long that the bubble was going to shrink, and it absolutely shrunk down because there were upsets in some of the other conferences, right? So you had the upsets, and not only did the Gophers take care of business against Penn State in overtime, okay, they ended up defeating Purdue, and they needed that victory, as evidenced by the 10 seed that they got in facing Louisville, okay? So all they did last week was get a couple of wins. I know that it was an ugly loss against Michigan, but I think – like I said with Mike Max, a little bit of tired legs. Also, just the fact that when you look at the matchup, that's not really a good matchup, the Gophers versus Michigan. But do I think that the Michigan Wolverines are that much better than the Gophers the way that they crush us? No, they're not. But all in all, tired legs, not a deep team. They ended up getting crushed. You got the two victories. You beat Penn State. You beat Purdue. You solidify yourselves. You get the bid. Now you have to be focused on Louisville, okay, in the East. That's where it all starts on Thursday. If people say, well, Lake, who are a couple of names that we have to be concerned about when it comes to Louisville? The two players specifically that you have to be concerned about is Jordan Wara. He is a very efficient scorer for them. He takes some, I don't know, he's one of those players that he's got the green light, but he's pretty efficient with his shot selection for the most part. He doesn't jack up a whole bunch of bad shots. He does lead them in scoring. He's a decent player. I would not call him or categorize him as a star, but he's a good player for them. He's their rock. He's who they lean on. He is one individual that you have to be aware of. And then the other guy and this is going to be really, really interesting to view and see how it's going to shake out, is Stephen Enoch, okay? He is a post player for Louisville. Very aggressive, strong, athletic post player, okay? I think his height is 6'9", right around 6'9", 6'10", because I've only seen Louisville play three times a year. Louisville's on TV all the time, okay, because the ACC conference is on all the time on ESPN. But he's athletic, and I'm interested in seeing who is going to draw the matchup. Is it going to be Jordan Murphy, or is it going to be Daniel Oturo? Like, who's going to spend the majority of the time? Because they do have other bigs, but he is the one that I'm interested in terms of who is going to draw that matchup. I'm assuming that it'll be Murphy because he's the experienced guy that's in the post. He is the one that will probably draw Enoch in terms of on the defensive end. So when the Gophers are on offense, I think Enoch is probably going to be the guy that's going to be defending Jordan Murphy. But it'll be very, very interesting to see how it shakes out. Just like I said with Mike 20 minutes ago, I really feel like this is a flip a coin game. Do I believe that the Golden Gophers can win this matchup? Absolutely, I think that they can. Now, when the lines were laid out yesterday, the Vegas line, initially, it started with Louisville being a 6-point favorite. Okay, a 6-point favorite. Then I saw a little bit later in the evening that spread went down to 5 points. I have not checked it today. Maybe I'll check in the next commercial break to see if it's went back up to 6 or if it's went even lower than the 5 that I last saw it at. But I think that this is a game. It's a winnable game for the Golden Gophers. I don't think that anybody out there that's a Gopher fan should say that we cannot beat Louisville in Des Moines. It's not a bad drive at all. This is like best case scenario. Because when I came in on Saturday and I was talking to Esme Murphy on her show, I brought up the possibility of maybe the Gophers get lucky and they land in Des Moines. Not really thinking that it would happen, but it did happen. So now Gopher fans can make the trek to Des Moines and root on the Gopher squad that we want to see advance. But it's going to be one of those matchups where it's going to come down to a couple of different things. Number one, which program and which team plays best in terms of transition offense? All right, who is going to get out and run and score buckets in transition? And we all know that when it's the Gophers and it's Amir Coffey and him slashing and making plays in transition, then you have a great opportunity at winning a basketball game. Dupree McGrair, also, when he is in transition and scoring buckets, you got a great chance to win. Now, in the half-court set, though, it gets a little bit shaky. Okay, we know that we like to get the ball to Jordan Murphy, and I know a lot of times he likes to try to go one-on-one and all of that. Some of that could be negated a little bit by Louisville's height. Okay, they don't have any, you know, super tall guys. They don't have anybody that's like 7'2" or anything like that. I mean, I think that their tallest player, they have one kid that's borderline 6'11", 7 feet tall, with some athleticism. But all in all, I think that the team that's able to do the better job of getting transition buckets will be the team that ends up winning this particular matchup. So it's going to be interesting to see how this thing shakes out. I actually, if you say, well, Lake, what did you do with your bracket? I penciled in Minnesota. And this is not a homer take. I actually think that the way that the Gophers are playing coming into this thing, that they should win this matchup. Louisville, absolutely on the struggle bus. They struggled down the stretch, not playing good basketball. I know that they're in the ACC, a slightly better conference than the Big Ten. And I know that somebody was joking with me a little bit over a week ago. I said, no, the Big Ten's a better conference. Well, when you look at it, three of the of the four number one seeds went to ACC schools. But bottom line, this is a very winnable game. I think the Gophers can get it done, and it'll be very, very interesting to watch how all this stuff plays out. Because if you say, what is the best case scenario? I think it's the Gophers win, and they advance to round two of the tournament. But then after that, I just don't see it happening. Michigan State is a really good team that has endured some injuries, but they've overcome, and they ended up with the two seed in the East. And so that's going to be a very, very interesting to see what a Minnesota-Michigan State matchup would look like, and I don't think they would bode well for the Gophers. But, hey, this is the way that I want to get it kicked off. Dave, I'm telling you, DJ, I'm telling you, this is the way that I want to get it kicked off, because Thursday, I'm all about watching the games, and what better situation? As Gopher fans, we are the ones that are kicking it all off. So we don't have to wait all day or wait all night to see our Gophers play. We get a chance to see them tip it up right away at 11:15.
I cannot wait to roll right out of bed and start watching basketball that I care about from minute one of the tournament. And from there on, it just goes for the whole weekend.
Yep. Now if you're wondering in terms of the East, the other teams of interest, clearly to me, at least when I look at the bracket here, I think that Michigan State is going to go far, but I don't have them coming out of the bracket. I have the team that I have coming out of the East is the number one seed, and that's being Duke. We'll get more into that a little bit later, but I just think that Zion Williamson is such a mismatch. Who's going to guard him? Who's gonna do a phenomenal job against him? I know that they took a couple of losses this year when he was out of the lineup, and I know that they did take a loss at the hands of Gonzaga earlier in the year when he was a part of that matchup and when he was healthy. But I just think that coming out of the East, I think that Duke is the team to beat. Hey, speaking of the East, there's a team that will be facing Michigan State in round one of the tournament that, look, they're happy to be dancing, but also they need to address some issues in regards to their program and how they need to better deal with the media. I'll explain what institution and what program that is. We'll do that next year on Lake Night on News Talk 830 WCCO. Back with you here on a Monday night on News Talk 830 WCCO, Henry Lake and DJ David Josephson. Talking tournament. That's going to be the A topic tonight. We got some other stuff. We got plenty of stuff tonight. We'll talk to Chris Broussard from Fox Sports 1 coming up next segment at 9:30. But one of the things that I saw over the weekend, and this is before the brackets were unveiled yesterday, was a story in regards to Bradley University. Okay, Bradley is in the tournament. They will be facing Michigan State. So imagine this. They're facing Michigan State. Realistically, if Bradley was able to pull off the major upset, they would be facing the winner of Louisville, University of Minnesota. Okay? So Bradley, I see this article, and it it really made me wonder what the heck is going on when it comes to Bradley and the way that they're thinking about how they should deal with the media members. A commentary in the sports section of the Journal Star, okay? PJStar.com. Commentary. BU disgraces itself, telling longtime PJS beat writer, you don't promote the Bradley brand. So essentially, this is what happened. This is what occurred. And then there's an update after this story kind of got a lot of traction and people started talking about it. There is a beat writer by the name of Dave Reynolds. He was participating, and he's been there for a long time. We're talking 30 years, okay? 30 years he's been covering Bradley University. And Dave Reynolds was participating in a media event for the upcoming NCAA tournament appearance, and they barred him from having the opportunity to talk to certain players, okay, or to talk to players. And this was all put together by the Bradley head coach, Brian Wardell, and his media relations staff. they were upset. They were frustrated. They were really, I feel like, being vindictive towards the beat writer, Dave Reynolds, and essentially stated that he could not participate in some of the back and forth. And so he questioned it. He said, you know, what's going on here? Why are you treating me this way? Okay. According to the Twitter account, when they tweeted on Friday night, they tweeted the following. During the 2018-19 season, the amount of access granted to Peoria Journal star reporter Dave Reynolds was reduced. At the time, his access to the Bradley basketball program was limited. We discussed the issues that led to the policy change with PJS sports editor Wes Hewitt, and the level of access has remained consistent for the last several weeks. Our focus is on preparing for the NCAA Men's Basketball Championship. Okay, so now when the editor met with the Bradley people, they stated that essentially they didn't like the coverage. Okay, they didn't like the coverage. And quote, you don't promote the Bradley brand, and basically we don't want you here. Wow. Now, look, there's a lot of things when it comes to sports and the type of coverage that you should give to whatever the team it is that you're covering. But having to always have an optimistic take or always having to be overly positive, why should it always be slanted that way? Or why should any media outlet from a beat writer have to promote the brand? Like, what does that even mean? He's covering the team. Of course he's going to, you would think, tell it like it is and be there and talking about what he's seeing and what he's observing to all of the fans. Like, if a beat writer starts talking about stuff and it's making no sense, fans aren't dumb. Fans get it. That's why I've never been somebody that has been about, I have to savage a team. Okay? You don't have to savage a team. You talk about when a team is doing poorly and you talk about how bad they are. But on the other hand, when they're playing well, you talk about how they're playing well. And you talk glowingly about that. You shouldn't have to go into it thinking it's one way or the other. It's not just about promoting a brand. So this story got out there. It took off and everybody started hammering Bradley. And so since all of that, they've actually somewhat apologized, okay? And they did grant him access, better access, or the access that he had for all those years moving forward. It never should have came to this. It never should have been something where they should have had to apologize in regards to the way that they were treating a beat reporter, a beat writer. This guy's been dedicated to that job for quite some time. And for you to treat Dave Reynolds like that, I think is very, very unfortunate. At least they fixed it, but it never should have got there in the first place. Hey, coming up next, though, from Fox Sports 1, we'll talk to my guy, Chris Broussard. When it comes to NBA basketball, he's got you covered. When it comes to so many different sports opinions, he's got us all covered. We're going to talk to Chris Broussard coming up next here. But before we do that, hey, today's top story comes your way in 60 seconds on News Talk 830 WCCO. And thank you, Laura. The current weather right now, temperature of 34 outside, brought to you by APA Medical. Welcome back to Late Night here on News Talk 830 WCCO. And I'm looking forward to this, to our next guest, because I've been a fan for years before we even knew each other, okay? And he's been holding it down, goes from ESPN to Fox Sports 1. That's where he's at now, doing a lot of stuff for Fox Sports and FS1. But joining us on the hotline is Chris Broussard, host of the Odd Couple radio show on Fox Sports. And you can catch him throughout the week on Fox Sports 1 as well. What's going on, Chris?
I'm great, man. We actually just got done with the I a couple shows, so it's good to talk with you. I've been talking with Rob Parker for the last 3 hours, so it's good to have another voice.
Now, when it comes to the name of the show, The Odd Couple, is it aptly named? I mean, does that make sense? Are you guys an odd couple?
It is aptly named. Rob and I are good friends. We've been friends for roughly 25 years, but we're very different. His takes are zany. Mine are logical. but we play off. He's divorced. I'm married. I've got children. He doesn't. You know, things like that. He made his name covering baseball. I obviously made mine covering basketball. So we have a lot of fun with it. We obviously have some things in common too, but yeah, it is aptly named. He was a huge fan of the Odd Couple, you know, radio show. I mean, I'm sorry, TV show. So, that's kind of where we got the name from, but it does fit.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And it's funny because I've only met Rob Parker one time, your co-host. And you know where that was at? It was in Cincinnati, and it was at the Major League Baseball game. I want to say it was around 4 or 5 years ago. So that makes sense, man. You say he's a big baseball guy.
Huge baseball fan, and we always debate baseball and basketball and things like that. But we have a lot of fun, man. It's a lot of fun doing it.
Absolutely. Give him a follow on Twitter, at Chris_Broussard. Chris Broussard from Fox Sports 1 joining us right now. Well, Chris, hey, it's that time of year, man. It's March Madness. I don't know how much college basketball you watch. I mean, you watch everything. When you guys do your show, you talk about everything, man. You guys talk baseball, you talk football, you talk college basketball, you talk NBA basketball. And when we first met and connected, it was a lot of NBA basketball stuff at the time. But let me start with college basketball, because everybody's talking about the Madness. And I want to start with the number one team in the country, that being Duke, or the number one seed in the East. And when it comes to Zion Williamson, and you've been covering basketball for a long time, have you seen anybody that compares to what he brings to the table in terms of the skill set and the size and all of that?
Well, it's interesting, because we were talking about it on our show earlier, and, you know, this is going to sound crazy to people, but it even sounded crazy to me when I thought about it, but when you really look at the history, I'm going to make this statement. He is arguably, and I'm probably leaning that way, the most dominant freshman in college basketball history. Now, remember, freshmen could not play varsity basketball until 1972. So that eliminates Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and, you know, at that time, Lou Alcindor, you know, all the guys before that. So then you're talking about guys like Carmelo Anthony, who averaged 22 points, 10 rebounds, and obviously led Syracuse to the national championship. Anthony Davis, who was a force on both sides of the floor, specifically defensively, for Kentucky when he led them to the title. A Kenny Anderson, a John Wall, you know. So when you really look at it, and I use the word dominant for a reason, I mean, this guy's shooting 69% from the floor. This guy gets it done on both ends. He's blocking jump shots. You know, Zion Williamson is a force. Obviously, it's not a huge weakness, but the only part of his game that's really missing is his jump shot. And it's not broken, but it's just not, you know, a great jump shot at this point. But I think when he gets to the next level, he'll work on it, develop that. You know, you see Blake Griffin now is a pretty good three-point shooter. Guys develop that part of their game now. So that's really the only thing you would look at Zion Williamson and question how successful he's going to be at the next level. But this guy can do it all. And I'm with you. Like, I don't know that we've seen a force like this. The thing I like about him, too, is that in this day and age, it is unusual for a player to be so dominant without needing to have the ball in his hands all the time, without being ball dominant. And that's what I like about Zion. He's playing off the ball. You know, Trey Jones or R.J. Barrett always has the ball, and he's still giving you 22 and 10 or 22 and 9 without having to dominate the basketball. And I think that's huge.
You know, it's man, it's that's a bold statement to say that he's the most dominant. The only reason why
I would throw this out just because Carmelo did win a national championship as a freshman, and so Zion pretty much has to, you know, finish the deal, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And if they lose earlier, then it's hard to argue with Carmelo.
What about Never Nervous Purvis?
Yeah, I mean, Purvis obviously didn't have the numbers that Zion has. He did lead the team to a championship, but you also, I believe, didn't have Milt Wagner that
year. Yeah, he had a squad.
And look, Zion's got a squad, too. That would be an argument for Melo.
Yep.
You know, Melo had Akeem Warwick, and I think Jerry McNamara, was he on that team?
Yep, he was.
Yeah, but he didn't have R.J. Barrett's probably the second best player in the country. So Zion has a squad, too, this Fab Four freshman group. So there's some, you know, it's debatable for sure. But I'm just saying the things that this guy's doing, I mean, for a 6'6 guy to shoot 69% from the field, I mean, that's ridiculous. Now, the older guys certainly were playing against tougher competition. Purvis played when, you know, the best player stayed 3 and 4 years in school. So that's big. Obviously, nowadays, the best college-age players are in the NBA. But what Zion is doing is incredible. And I'm telling you, I haven't talked to one person in the NBA who hasn't told me this guy's the consensus number one pick.
So when you looked at the brackets, do you have Duke winning it all?
I haven't put together my bracket yet.
Okay.
I certainly think they are the favorite, and I think they should be the number one seed overall. But I, you know, I need to sit down and do my bracket, probably do that tomorrow. And, you know, obviously there's always upsets. But I do think, you know, Carolina's tough. Obviously they beat Duke twice without Zion, but they're a tough team, and in that game could have went either way the other day. Michigan State, who's in Duke's region, is obviously tough. I think they kind of got the short end of the stick. Being the number one 2 seed, for them to end up in Duke's region, I think was, you know, that wasn't really a great look, but it is what it is. You have to beat them at some point.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, and there's some good teams, and obviously there are going to be some upsets. I think one of these days, I don't predict this year, but we will see a mid-major win it all, just because obviously the most talented teams are young with a bunch of freshmen, but the teams with the most seasoning, the most chemistry, the highest basketball IQ, those teams are, in a lot of cases, mid-majors because they got guys staying 4 years or 3 years at the very least. And so, you know, we almost saw it, obviously, with Butler a couple times. But one of these days, a mid-major will win the tournament.
We're talking to Chris Broussard, host of The iCouple on Fox Sports Radio. Also, you can check him out, on Fox Sports and Fox Sports 1. All right, let's totally flip the script. And let's talk some NBA. And we're the radio home for the Minnesota Timberwolves. And, you know, one of the things that fans here want your thoughts on is because everybody loves what Carl Anthony Towns is bringing to the table. He's been balling. I think he took it personal when all the Jimmy Butler stuff went down. And he says, you know what? I'm not going to be the brunt of jokes. I'm going to step my game up, which he has. But the guy that everybody's wondering what the heck is going on is Andrew Wiggins. When you talk to people in NBA circles and everybody is looking at Andrew Wiggins and wondering what's going on with Andrew Wiggins, what's maybe some of the sentiment of people out there that you talk to in regards to maybe just his game lacking? And, you know, for the amount of talent that he has, it seems like he's not progressing.
Honestly, it hasn't changed over the past few years. And almost with him entering the draft, his motor, that's the question. He's got obviously the athleticism. He's got a nice skill set. You see it from time to time. But he doesn't have the motor of a star player. It's just that simple. And I got to be honest, watching him and seeing this going now for a few years, I don't know that that's going to change. He might just be a third guy. You know, I mean, that's what he is, because he doesn't have the passion. He doesn't play with that aggressiveness. He is content at times to float, to be in the corner. That's what it is, man. And that, look, Jimmy Butler was in the wrong for a lot of what he did in Minnesota. But that was a frustration of his. You see this guy with all this talent, and he's not, I don't even want to say he doesn't work hard. He just doesn't have that passion mm-hmm. to bring it every night. And, you know, that's his issue. That really is it. You know, obviously he can work on some skills, just shooting 39% from the floor. So he can certainly improve on some things. But he has all the talent to be a star in this league. Obviously, people thought he and Karl Anthony Towns were this great inside-outside tandem that was going to lead Minnesota to great success. But right now, he's the third guy.
Okay.
There's no ifs, ands, or buts. If that. But he just doesn't have the motor. That's really what it is, and that's what people talk about.
Yeah, that's so unfortunate, man, because Cat's balling right now, and he needs some help, he needs some assistance, and it's not happening. It'll be interesting to see how things kind of play out this summer. I'm inclined to think, through the people that I've talked to, that Derrick Rose is not going to look to make major, major money on the open market, that he will take a pay, that not, I don't want to say a pay cut, because he's going to get paid.
He's not going to make a ton of money. I mean, he's going to get, you know, a nice little contract, but
he can make more. He can make more getting out of here than what he's going to make here.
Yeah, but he's not going to get a huge
yeah.
offer.
Yeah. No, not,
I mean,
not, yep, you're right.
18 and four assists. You know, look, he's back compared to what he has been the past few years, but honestly, these are similar numbers that he put up in New York. And he's shooting it better from the three than ever. And it's good to see him have, you know, the 50-point game and have a few nights here and there. And he's playing well, don't get me wrong.
Yep.
But to think a team is going to invest huge money in him and think he's their point guard
no.
for the future, no, no, no.
Yeah, that's not
because
happening.
Because his game is, you know, it's nice. And, again, I know he's giving you 18 points a game. He's shooting decent from the floor. But the wins aren't coming. If he was doing this and they were in the playoffs, then I think it'd be a different story. Now, that could work out for you guys. Look, obviously Minnesota has been a place he's been able to resurrect his career. He sees what Karl Anthony Towns can do. I do see it being a place he'd want to stay. But it's not going to be – look, teams are going to offer him some stuff, but it's not going to be – this huge market for D. Rose.
No, I feel you on that. Hey, give him a follow on Twitter at Chris_Broussard, host of The Odd Couple. Check him out on Fox Sports, Fox Sports 1 and Fox Sports Radio. Hey, Chris, man, we'll have to catch up during the playoffs, and we'll be talking down the line. Man, you got your Twitter followers. You got 1.36 million followers, bro.
Man, I'm trying to get to 1.4. I need some more. You know how it is. You're never satisfied.
I feel you, my man. Hey, thanks for hopping on with us tonight.
All right, bro. Anytime.
All right, take care. That's Chris Broussard joining us here on Late Night on News Talk 830 WCCO. All right, thanks again to Chris Broussard for joining us here on Late Night on News Talk 830 WCCO. Chris is one of the best out there when it comes to NBA insiders. I know he's doing a little bit less of that now, but he's got all the connections in the world. And I mentioned it on air. I didn't realize he had that many Twitter followers. 1.36 million? It's a lot, man. That's a lot. Good job. All right, now this story that I want to get into right now before the top of the hour break and we get back to the NCAA brackets is, the big story from last week was the academic scandal and the bribery and the fraud and everything that was taking place last week with the actresses, and just it was a bunch of other people that were involved in this too. Okay, but those were, you know, the actresses that came out and everybody was talking about them. They were the ones that everybody was focused in on. But I saw this story from CBS Sports and I'm scratching my head when I saw it, and I'm thinking to myself, This guy can't be serious, right? Headline, Yale soccer coach fired over involvement in bribery scheme, reportedly asked students to write his academic papers, okay? So less than a week after Yale fired him as a school women's soccer coach for his involvement in a college admissions bribery scheme, Rudy Meredith has been accused of additional misconduct. So this is, listen to this, DJ. Meredith, okay, this is the women's soccer coach at Yale. He was pursuing a master's degree at Ohio University while coaching the women's team, and in between allegedly accepting bribes to falsely label non-Yale athletes as soccer recruits, he pressured members of his team, quote, to not only edit his academic papers, but also to write significant parts of them, according to a report by the Yale Daily News. This is the women's soccer coach pressured members of his team as he's trying to obtain a master's degree at Ohio University to not only edit his academic papers, not only edit, but also to write significant parts of them. This is unbelievable. Unbelievable.
I don't get how, if you're at that level of a coach, I understand that, you know, Yale is a well-known school and it's soccer, but it's not like you're the coach of the New England Patriots or anything. Like, how do you not think that this will get out? Like, I can't see that not coming to light.
This is unbelievable. Two of Meredith's former players told the Yale Daily News that teammates, quote, felt compelled to write Meredith's papers because they felt it would gain them better treatment on the team. Neither of the two players said they wrote any papers for Meredith, but also accused former Yale athletic director Tom Beckett of taking no action against Meredith despite numerous complaints that spanned many years. This is I've never heard of anything like this. Like we've heard of academic fraud, and we've heard of tutors, you know, doing things for student athletes and stuff. But I've never heard a story in which a coach is trying to obtain an advanced degree and is telling players, do my work. It's mind-boggling. Seriously? This is what we're doing now? This is what we're doing. I mean, like, what was the payoff? Like, I get the players said they felt compelled because it felt it would gain them better treatment. But I mean, was it like bonus playing time? Like what was the ultimate like payoff? Like, what was the win for them? Or did they feel like if they didn't do it and were being pressured into it, that they wouldn't see playing time? I wonder if that was probably more so the case.
I guess, but in either of those cases, it doesn't seem worth it. There's no $1 million at the end of this rainbow. It's, you know, more playing time or whatever. And how does he think that the, you know, players would accept that or go along with that? I don't get it.
It's just unbelievable. Unbelievable. That you thought, and then on top of that, thought you were going to get away with it.
Yeah.
Like, no. And this is Yale. This is Yale University.
Makes you wonder if he felt incapable of writing the papers and that the students would do it better, or if he just figured he didn't have time and is trying to take some shortcuts. I don't know.
No, I definitely think that, look, he said, I'm around some kids that are extremely bright, extremely smart, and I want to make sure that I get this graduate degree. That, I believe, was absolutely the case. All right, coming up next, we get back to the brackets. We take a glance at the West. The West. That's right. More NCAA talk next as we look at the Western region right here on Lake Night on News Talk 830 WCCO.